You're tuned to the Beacon, KSJE 90.9 FM. I'm Nick Michael, and I'm here to present a special episode of Success with San Juan College students. At San Juan College, we care about student success, and in the Service Learning Class LRNS 111, students explore success and how to create it from many different perspectives. For the interviews you are about to hear, students completed them in the style of NPR's StoryCorps with someone they consider successful in order to broaden and deepen our understanding of what success really means. This week, we're going to hear from students Chris Gill, Carly Serrano, Kyle Allen, Yami Palenko, and Marwood Sloan, along with their guests, all of whom embody success in the eyes of their interviewers.
Hi, my name is Chris. Today I will be interviewing my friend Lisa on her decision on having the gastric sleeve surgery. Hi, Lisa. How are you today?
I'm good. Thank you.
What kind of choices led you to decide to have this surgery?
Well, I have been overweight my entire life. Between trying to change my eating and exercise, I just wasn't losing weight, and I was facing being a diabetic and also dealing with heart disease. So we decided with my primary physician that the gastric sleeve would be the best option for me to lose weight so that I could have a healthy lifestyle and be healthy for my family.
What did you have to give up to get to this point?
Well, I had to do 6 months of supervised doctor visits, so I had to give up soda. I had to go to a low-carb diet, had to do 1,800 calorie for the day, every day, and exercise. And then I just met up with my physician, and we just went over everything every month.
How has the surgery affected your family and job and your ongoing goals?
I have more energy, so I perform my jobs better. It has changed the way my family eats. I have a very supportive husband and family that help keep me on track.
Kind of has a trickling effect.
It does. It does. But you have seen how my children make healthier choices in food versus how we used to eat before. So it helps.
That's wonderful. What are some of your long-term goals that you want to get out of this?
Let's see. I am kind of a long-term goal is planning in November to be running the Blacklight 5K that's in Albuquerque in November. To get down to a healthy weight with my BMI and just remain there and stay healthy for my family.
What did you learn about yourself along this journey?
I learned that I had a very big dependence on food. Food was my source of comfort when I was stressed or had anxiety. So I had to relearn how to recope, learn how to communicate more, express my feelings, and use food as a tool to help me survive and live and not as a means of comfort.
Exactly. Well, I am so proud of you because you look awesome.
Thank you.
Is there anything else that you would like to add, somebody that's thinking about doing this or anything in general?
If you are looking into doing the gastric sleeve or any of the gastric type of surgeries for weight loss, my advice to you is go to bariatric or blossombariatric.com. You can also look at them on YouTube, and it'll give you the information you're looking for. There's videos. Dr. Tom Ombach is who I did my surgery, and he's very informative. They're very good information to kind of go by so that you can figure out how to start and where to go so that you could have the same journey. I mean, it's a big step, but it's a good step to make if you're wanting to learn weight.
That's great. Well, I really appreciate you taking your time today and coming here and doing this interview. And I wish you success on the rest of your journey.
All right. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
And that was Chris Gill. Coming up next on our program, Carly Serrano interviews her father, a local small business owner.
Hello, my name is Carly Serrano. I am a 17-year-old full-time student at San Juan College. I'm speaking with Jesse Serrano, my father. So, Jesse, can you tell us a little about yourself?
Yes. I was born in Durango, Colorado, and I finished school in Denver, Colorado. I graduated from high school, 1980. And from there, I had went to the U.S. Navy in the aviation field. And I did my four-year term there in the aviation field. And then after the services, I had continued to wanted to go into the National Guard, but something came up in the family. So I came back home, and we started a business with Serrano's, Inc., my father and I. And from there, we continued doing our family business, him and I, and then later on in the years, we joined in my brother and sister. And this is, and now it's a family-owned business that's very successful.
So would you say he helped you on your journey to success in the family company?
Well, we helped each other in the journey to success. But yes, he gave me a lot of initiation and go-get to run a business. And being both of us not being educated in business administration or anything like that, so we just used our mentally mind to start a business. And my father is a very wise man, so I learned off him, and I try to want to be wise as him to continue our business.
Okay. Have you had to make hard choices that led to your success?
We had to make a lot of hard choices.
Can you name any examples?
Yes, in our business, we had to make hard choices in buying equipment, employees.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very hard decision to get what you want to do and figuring out. We got the power plants in the Four Corners area, so we got a hard decisions how we're going to make the power plants happy, individual contractors happy, and ourselves, of course, us happy.
Mm-hmm. How did you push through the hard times?
Push through the hard times? A very good question, Carly. We had to do a lot of blood, sweat, and tears. It really did.
Mm-hmm.
We pushed each other. I pushed my father. He pushed me in a sensible way and mentally wise that we need to get this done. So we had to push each other to get it done. We had to make long trips to get this done. We had to go out of town to push each other. We had to push us out of town, 200-mile radius, to get the business going. Eventually, we came in closer and closer to Farmington. So we pushed ourselves out of the territory to succeed.
Mm-hmm.
And that, as we succeeded, we moved in closer into Farmington. And now we're big in Farmington. And now we continue to work out in the 200-mile radius and what we do in the business in the trucking division.
What habits or daily routines do you have?
Well, sun comes up at 6. I'm at it, drinking coffee, having breakfast, thinking what we're going to do in our Serrano business. And what is the habit for me is just to go to work, manage the business, manage our yard hands, manage our drivers. And it's just a daily habit of what I do to succeed, to make sure that everything gets done correctly and safely. That's just a habit that I do. I've been doing it for years as a supervisor. So my habit is to supervise. And then you have your lunch and your habit of having dinner. I do have a habit of pickling around with my hot rods daily. But yes, that's my daily habits.
How would you keep track of the things that you need to do? Can you describe your personal organization system? How do you keep track of the employees in the company yard?
Again, that's a supervising decision that I had was taught to me through the military, U.S. Navy. So when I received a lot of supervision by being supervised, and then I was taught to supervise under a, chain of command. So I put my organization under top of me, and I worked the next person underneath me, and the next person underneath him, and the next person underneath him to get this organized together to continue to be successful for us to employ employers and us to continue in our business. That's what we do.
Mm. Can you describe how the company keeps track of your guys's trucks and orders of other things you guys need to do, as mud tanks or septic toilets? How you guys keep it organized?
I use the chain of command again. That's what we do. It goes from me down to the next person on down to get these guys rolling in the field in the Port-a-John Sanitation Department. Then we have the Water Truck Division Department, and then we have the Trash Container Department, and then we have the Fresh Water Department. So I send these individuals in the different divisions to organize in these divisions. So I got a person that takes care of four divisions.
Right.
And I put them to work, and they tell them what to do, how to take care of the guys. Like, again, a chain of command. So, I supervise the guy below me, and then the guy below me supervises the other ones. That's how we organize it. And through the office, gets the calls, and they tell me what needs to be done, and then I go supervise what needs to be done and finished.
So you guys divide the work up. Everyone has their own jobs, and that's how you guys keep your organization?
Yes.
Good. What's your definition of success?
My definition of success is what I've been successing so far. My father is elder than I am, and he succeeded. He can go back in his past in the 30 years and succeeded what he succeeded. But I got 30 years ahead of me still, that I have a lot to succeed. And that's my definition of success, that I have many years ahead of me to succeed and be successful. Not only in the business, but in my family, in our home. And I want to succeed in success for the children to have their own future, a secure future. That's my definition of success. If they succeed, then I succeeded. That's my definition of success. To be a good father, be a good husband, and be a good son. And that's if you could do that, then that's your success in your life.
Okay. So you would say that your image of success would be more emotionally between family and feelings than it would be material-wise, as with money or cars and houses?
Yes, and both family and business. Of course, family always comes first, but business is very hard to. We got to comprehend in life, how you're going to do your business, and then you figure this business out, and you get everything done, and you got to figure how your family comes in, and then you got to do them right and what they want to succeed, and to help them with my children. And again, like, I have 30 years of me to keep on succeeding, and that includes my kids succeeding in life also. But if they succeed, then I succeed.
In what ways do you consider yourself a success?
The things that we accomplished in the business and what we have bought to equipment to run a business, and we got to continue doing this and continue doing this to be successful.
Can you tell us how the company started out from the beginning, Serrano's?
During the days of drilling rigs, my brothers worked in the drilling rigs, and they find out that it needed a place to use the restroom. And all they had, the drilling rigs, was metal outhouses. So my brother and my father got together, and they said, well, you know what, let's just buy some porta-johns and see if we can rent them out to the rigs. We got one rig, and then we got another rig, and another rig. And before you know it, we're getting homes, special events.
Did you ever have doubters or people that said no?
Well, when we first started, it was a little bit of a... I know we never doubted, but it was a little bit of a...
A struggle?
A struggle, a little bit of embarrassment also, because we started going into the sewer sanitation business. And people kind of looking at us, wow, Tony Serrano, my father, and Jesse, and my brother Gilly, they're in the sewer business now. They're going to get into the sewer business. And they kind of thought, like, I don't know, that's kind of out of their league. But we just started figuring it brings in success. We started figuring this brings in success. And so,
how long has the company been around?
This is 1984. With my brothers and my father. And then I came in the company after I had got out of the U.S. Navy. I kind of went on with the U.S. Navy. Mm. And I could have kept on. But my father needed me. And there's so many things you can...
So in a way, you helped him on his journey to success also?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, it was just him and I after the loss of my brother.
Yeah.
Yes. So we struggled. We pushed. We sweated. Financially wise, we just kept money kept coming in. We kept buying and buying and buying. And we used our minds as a, like I said before, we weren't educating the business, but as you take in work, you're a business person already, and it just comes automatically that you know what to do.
So you learn as you go.
You learn as you go.
Yeah. Is there other ways that you consider your success, yourself a success?
Well, the things
with your family-wise, or...
Well, the things that we have bought, land. I consider success of buying land and homes, trips, vacations, and so I consider that being successful. If you can go do these things and go on vacation, come back to work, continue your organization, and continue being successful, and buy your equipment, buy your personal home, your personal vehicles, and you make your, like everyone else, everybody makes their payments, but if you continue to make your payments, which is, if you don't have good credit, and then you want to succeed. So that's what we established, and me and my father and the company, that you got to have succeed to have good credit, to succeed in life, to what you want to buy.
Well, since I consider you personally a success as a father. Can you say that you consider yourself a success as a father too?
Yes, of course. Okay. I love all my children. And when they ask for help, I'll be there to help them. So yes, I'm very proud of all my children. And I know my children are proud of me. So yes, and I'm very proud of Cardi doing this interview with me.
Okay, well, that's it from Jesse Serrano. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Carly, and thank you for having me here.
And that was Carly Serrano interviewing her father, who is a local small business owner. Coming up next, we have Kyle Allen interviewing San Juan College's president, Dr. Pendergrass.
I was curious, what would you consider your biggest success up to this point in life, I should say?
Oh, I would consider my biggest success is being a mother. I'm really proud of my three children, and it's just life-changing, and that's what I'm most proud of, is what I'm, you know, that's what I enjoy the most, is what I'm able to spend time with my family. So I would say my biggest success is my family.
And how long did it take you to actually get your PhD?
Well, my bachelor's degree, I pursued a bachelor's degree at New Mexico State, and I actually took a class here one time when I was home in the summer. I graduated from Aztec High School, and I took a biology class here, but that was 4 years, and then my master's degree I completed in a year and a half from New Mexico State, and then I worked for almost 5 years at Clovis Community College. And then I decided to go work on my doctoral degree, and it's in educational administration from the University of Texas at Austin. And it has a specialization in community college leadership. That took me 2 years and 2 months.
Congratulations
so
on that.
I tried to go. I wasn't working. Well, I did work while I was working on my doctorate, being a proctor for the engineering graduate school, but I pretty much just went straight through and tried not to take any breaks, and I didn't work full time by any means. So that's how long it took.
Mm-hmm. One of the questions that I really wanted to ask you was, what would your advice for first time students around my age, since I'm 17 and just now starting and just now looking at the world from new eyes, I should say?
My biggest advice is I would recommend that you develop a plan. I know that was shared with me a lot when I was in high school, and I didn't really think it was that important, but as I look back, you know, it's really important. I think you should use all of the resources we have here at the college to determine your pathway. So like in career services, we have assessments you can take based on your personality and interests, and it'll help kind of tell you which career areas might be of interest. But the biggest thing is to stay committed and dedicated to your goal, and to not blame others for where you are, what you have or don't have, but to really just keep that in mind even when times get tough, and to finish. I think that's the biggest thing, is to finish what you start, so that it's hard to stop out and come back. It just is. Everybody, you know, has all these conflicting priorities, but if you know what you want to pursue, it's not easy by any means, but just to finish, I think that's really important.
Answer. So in my learns class lately, we have been talking about such things as your inner voice, stuff that says negativity towards you. Did you ever come across that a lot in your time in college?
Oh, definitely. I think it's always there, our inner voice, and it's easy to let negativity override all of your thoughts. But I think by trying to be a positive person and be grateful for what you have makes a big difference and kind of putting it all into perspective. I think we're pretty blessed. But, you know, the college is here to help. So if you are having difficulties in any area, whether that's study skills or tutoring, or you don't have, you're having difficulty with transportation or rent or whatever, or emotional issues, we have resources here to help. So I think people need to listen to your inner voices, but be grateful for what we have, and to don't let negativity override your thoughts, because it won't help you, you know, at all.
So I know you have won some awards. Can you tell us a little bit about those?
Some awards?
Yes, some awards you have won. I don't remember what they're called.
Oh, sure. The college has won. Do you mean individually or college awards?
I guess we can go over both if you really want to.
Okay, sure. As far as the college, I mean, we have wonderful employees here at the college, and we're really proud of the great work they do. Some awards that we've won recently was the and we received an award by the Association of Commerce and Industry. It's kind of like the state chamber of commerce, and they give an annual award to just a few companies, and we're only the second higher education institution in the state to ever receive it since they've been around. But New Mexico Tech had received it, and then we received it a couple of years ago, so we were really proud of that award. Another thing we're really proud of is that we're second in the nation for serving Native American students as far as how many graduate. We're only two students from number one, so we really want that gold medal, so to speak, so that we can be number one, because we're proud of our culture and what we've accomplished with those graduates. Personally, I received an award from the Farmington School District after I was here a year, and that just recognizing someone in the community that's been really supportive of the public schools, and I was honored to receive that. I've also received some leadership awards that I'm proud of.
I do have to admit, our school is very soaked in cultural differences and everything. How the style of our college is always from the, I don't remember what they're called, but the bags. I always forget what they're called right offhand.
The what?
The bags at Christmas time. I always
forget. Oh, the luminarias?
Yeah. I always forget what they're called.
Uh-huh.
That has always been one of my favorite traditions of the area, and I love how that goes with the cultural around here.
Mm-hmm.
So I do agree the college has a lot to do with cultural stuff.
Oh, yes, definitely. And you know, the luminarias, that's the largest display in the state annually, and that's kind of our gift to the community. And there's usually 20 to 30,000 of them that community members and college employees work together to do that one night a year. So it's a big deal to us, and we're really proud of that tradition. And, you know, our fine arts that we have here at the college are pretty phenomenal, you know, even just walking down the hall. But all our local artists and our student artists and our musical performances and our pottery program, you know, they're just great programs. And Lynn Ann Easley does a great job in our fine arts area with all of her productions and the theater productions that Molly does. So we're really proud. You know, there's a lot of things that people, I think we need to really work on marketing those. I know marketing does a great job with that, but I think I'm not sure everyone knows of all the wonderful assets the college has.
Those assets do tend to help a lot of students with success, Ian. But so, a student that has just graduated from San Juan, they plan to transfer to, like, a university. Mm-hmm. What would your advice to them?
I would recommend that we have a grant now that helps them. It's called Fast Forward, to help them with that transfer experience. I would recommend they talk to an advisor, and they can connect them with that grant, or just talk with our counselors and advisors to make sure everything transfers seamlessly, so they don't have to repeat any courses and they are on track, so they'll graduate within the 4-year time frame. Mm-hmm. And we can also help them with their applications for the 4-year university, and also help them with scholarships. So we have a lot of what we call articulation agreements, but that's kind of a fancy word for it's a guaranteed admission agreement. So if you graduate from San Juan College with your certificate or associate's degree, they'll guarantee admission into those universities. So I think, the overlying theme here is seek out the resources and go to your counselor or advisor, and we can make sure that it's a smooth transition.
Mm-hmm. Was there ever a time when you honestly didn't feel that you were going to succeed in college? If so, how did you overcome it?
Oh, yes, definitely. When I was a freshman in college, I was paranoid that I was going to flunk out. I didn't think that I had the skills necessary, even though my grades were just fine in high school, but I was really worried, and I kind of overdid it. But the I had some classes that were really tough, but I enrolled in a program that's kind of like our EDGE program here, like a TRIO program, and it was for first generation college students, because my parents didn't graduate from college. And they provided a mentor to me that I met with every couple weeks that would just see how I was doing. And then I also had free tutoring, so if I indicated I needed help in a subject. And here at San Juan College, all tutoring is free. So I worked with the tutors to help me in subjects. Even if I already had decent grades, they just help you bring it up that much more. You network with people, they'll help you with studying and different groups, but just don't try and isolate yourself, because if you're having difficulty, someone else is probably having difficulty as well. So you just need to work together, and don't be afraid to approach your professors and ask them what they recommend for assistance. They might be able to give you some other resources to help you be successful or point you in the right direction.
So in my case, since it is, sometimes I'm intimidated to go to my instructors, since throughout my high school, I wouldn't always said no one cared in college about your grades and stuff, which is kind of what I was always told and still somewhat feared. So what would you say to a student such as me?
I would say to approach your instructors, because I know here at San Juan College, they welcome your thoughts and questions, and that's their job, is to help the students be successful, and they want to do that. And, I would advise students to work closely with them. But, if there's a case where you don't feel like you're being heard, then you go talk to the dean. We have protocols in place where anyone, an employee or a student, if they don't feel that they're being heard or it's not being addressed, then you talk to someone else, because the last thing we want is for students to drop out and have a bad experience, because it's that much harder to come back.
Well, I think that I talked to all my questions.
Okay.
Thank you very much for your time.
Oh, of course. Thank you. I enjoyed it, and I hope you're enjoying your student success class.
Thank you again.
Thank you.
And that was Kyle Allen interviewing Dr. Pendergrass. You're listening to The Beacon, KSJE 90.9 FM, and this is a special episode of Student Service Learning Interviews. Real students from San Juan College interviewing those they consider to be successful in an effort to find out how they became so and what success means to them. Coming up next, we have Yami Polanco interviewing Dr. Schmidt.
Okay, so for my class, we are all interviewing someone who we consider successful. And me personally, I consider you very successful. Dr. Schmidt, you are a full-time doctor at the urgent care here in Farmington, and you also have 13 children. So, I have a few questions on, you know, what it is you did to be successful, what you went through, and first of all, did you always know you wanted to be a doctor, or did you have other dreams?
Well, when I was young, I did have other dreams. I initially wanted to be a sign language interpreter. My grandmother was a nurse, and so I, for a long time, thought I would be a nurse. Read all of her nursing books when I was 13 to 15 and just really aspired to that. Nurse practitioners were not a thing back then, so I didn't know that you could be a nurse and give orders and do things like midwife practice. And so I decided to be a doctor.
So whenever you were doing that, did you go to school for nursing also, or you just...
Just medical school.
Just medical
school. Hung all my hopes on one medical school and got in.
Which one did you go to?
University of Missouri in Kansas City.
That's awesome. At any time in your life, did you consider staying home with your children rather than continuing to practice?
Many times, actually. As you know, I have a lot of kiddos. And so my first two kiddos, I really had considered it initially, but my husband was staying at home, and he stayed home for 19 years, which made it very easy for me to focus on my career, basically. As I got to have more children, I really decided that maybe I should be at home, and that really hasn't worked out in God's timing yet.
Really? Yeah, that's really awesome that you have your husband to stay home and help you. That'd be really difficult without him. So what is your definition of success, and do you consider yourself a successful person?
Yes, I consider myself successful. I probably don't define it as the world might define it, between degrees and education and money. Rather, I would define it as the things that go on behind all of that. So for me, it's being a good wife, a good mother, a good daughter, a good steward of God's gifts that He's given me. So for me, it's the daily meeting of all the tasks that I need to do at my home. And when I'm at work, those tasks at work.
And what do your children think of it? Are you still practicing? Do they love it? Do they love the fact that you're still working? And
It goes in ebbs and flows. Sometimes they love having a mom that works, because they realize a lot of the things that they get to do is because I go and work and make money to do those things. Other times they're very frustrated because I miss the important things to them. And luckily it's not all the time. If I can't be there, my husband's there. If he can't be there, I'm there. But I have missed quite a significant portion of their childhoods. It's getting better now.
Yeah, no, and there's definitely a bit of them, so I'm sure all of them have something important going on all the time, so it's kind of hard to get to every single one of them and still have a job, huh?
That is true, and I think any working mother really struggles with that. Yeah. So it's really trying to figure out what is the one thing that that particular child would really not like you to miss, and trying to make that.
Mm-hmm. And what are some of your biggest obstacles you've had to overcome?
Probably, I would say the biggest in medicine is being a woman in medicine. And by that, I mean I was asked to leave medical school twice after each kiddo, once in residency, and then in my practice even. There are those that think that you cannot do both, be a mother and be a solid, good physician. So that's probably the most frustrating one that I've ever come up against.
So it definitely sounds like people around you have doubted you. And whenever they did, how did you overcome that? And what did you do to keep doing what it is you wanted?
Well, I think like a lot of people, I get very frustrated when people don't believe in me. And so I just push all the harder to show them that I can and I will do it. Whatever I have my mind set, I'll achieve those goals. And it's not without faith. I mean, I go back running to my faith at all times.
Yeah.
Because God is my champion.
Yeah. And definitely, you know, being a woman and then having children, I know that most people, not even just doctors, just most women in general, after maybe three or four kids, they're just like, okay, I have to stop. I have to stay home and raise my children. And, you know, So I definitely think, you know, 13, that's awesome for you to still be practicing. And with saying that, have you ever failed at anything and you just couldn't get over it? But if you did, you know, how did you recover?
Well, that's a great question. I did have trouble with certain tests and just learning how to overcome the test-taking skills to be able to show that I had the ability to pass those certain tests. Getting through various things that have happened in the practice, that is something that, for instance, I had a situation where a mother died after a delivery, and that was very heart-wrenching, you know, for both the family and I, and that took a lot of courage and strength to come back. And again, I have to say it all was based on my faith. The only reason that I came back from that and was able to regroup, if you will, was that I could go to God and say, this is not the outcome that I wanted, but this is the outcome that happened, and know that that doesn't define me, really.
Yeah, no, definitely. That's really hard. And I know there's a lot of situations now where a lot of people aren't able to have children, and it's just very difficult to go through that. And, you know, you're definitely blessed to be able to have 13
very
beautiful, healthy children.
Very.
And what are their age groups, like, ranging so from?
Age range from 22 all the way to 3.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So what does your 3-year-old think of all this? She's still getting used to, she loving the big family and all that.
They love the big family.
Yeah.
There are times when they don't, but the younger that they are, the more they do love being able to hang out with their big brothers and sisters. It's all very special.
And in your family, like, do you have brothers and sisters? Do they all also have big families?
They don't. My brother has 2 children, and my sister has 1 child.
Wow.
So.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So, well, I want to say thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to come and do this interview with me. You know, I definitely, whenever you told me to interview someone successful, you were the first person that came to mind, because I just definitely admire.
Aw, thank you, Yami. That's so sweet.
Yeah, no problem. All right. Well, thank you for coming in, and I hope you have a great rest of your day.
Great. It's my privilege. Blessings.
Blessings.
And that was Yami Polanco interviewing Dr. Schmidt. Coming up next, to round out our hour, we have Marwood Sloan interviewing Farmington's mayor, Mayor Roberts.
Well, my name's Marwood Sloan. I'm majoring in welding. Okay, let's get down to the questions. What do you think the most important issue facing this town are?
Well, the economy is the most important issue. The economy creates opportunity for people, it creates jobs, and obviously people need jobs to have a good standard of living. But jobs also create buying power for people, and the city of Farmington, as a governmental entity, relies on people buying goods and products and services in order to be able to provide services to the people in return. So jobs are critical, and much of our effort is about maintaining and creating jobs.
What do you hope to accomplish for this coming year?
Well, we hope to still maintain a lot of emphasis on economic development, and we just talked about why it's important to have a heavy emphasis on economic development. It's not an easy game to play. We're isolated in northwest New Mexico. We don't have any infrastructure in this part of the state that strong economic centers have. We don't have rail. We don't have navigable waters. We don't have large air providers in this area. Our airport is small. We really don't have interstate highways, so we don't have the infrastructure that generally is needed to have strong economic development. But what we do have are some assets that we will rely on to create economic opportunity for people. Because of our struggling economy, we have declining revenues at the city level, and so we continually have to monitor the programs and services that we provide to citizens. There are some essential services that we provide, like fire and police, and there are recreation activities that we think are essential as well. We provide road service, road maintenance, those kinds of things, all that are essential. When we are confronted with tough economic times, we need to determine whether there are some non-essential services that may need to be analyzed and reviewed to determine whether it's necessary to continue to provide them. That's in tough economic times. So, the issues that we really will be dealing with are fiscal in nature.
How long did it take to become mayor?
Well, you have a process of filing a certificate of your intention to run for mayor. That's usually done in January of the election year, and then the election is scheduled in March. So it's the window is pretty short in time. It's about a two-month period of time. In reality, you're looking at the question of whether or not to run much earlier than that. But if you're talking about what it takes to prepare yourself to become mayor, then that's a much longer period of time. It's based on life experiences and education and occupational experience. Those are all things that factor into whether a person is qualified to serve as mayor of a community. And I've been involved in local government in one form or another for about 14 years now. And I was a city councilor for 8 years, then took 4 years off of being involved in local government, and then now I've been mayor for 6 years. I also served on the Farmington School Board for 4.5 years, many years ago. So I've had a number of life experiences, and my education is conducive to a role as mayor in a community. So actually preparing yourself for this role is a longer period of time.
Okay. Talking about education, what did you get your degree in?
I went to the University of New Mexico in Albuquerque and got my undergraduate degree in business administration. And then following graduation from UNM, I entered law school at the University of New Mexico and got my Juris Doctor degree. So I had a total of 7 years of college or graduate level education.
Okay. What is your thought about the oil fields jobs now compared from last year and the year before?
Well, San Juan County in northwest New Mexico is historically relied upon the extractive industries as the foundation of the economy. That includes coal and natural gas and oil. We're primarily a natural gas producing area historically, and not as reliant on oil. Our oil reserves are not as plentiful as our natural gas reserves. And then obviously we have a very huge reserve of coal in this area. With commodity prices declining as they have, natural gas prices and oil prices declining as they have over the last several months, there's obviously going to be a consequence of that, and the consequence is that those with the money to drill for oil and natural gas are not going to spend it. They have to have a reasonable price in order to expend the cost of producing and extracting that product from beneath the ground. If they are not active, then the service industry, those companies that are out there doing business to provide services for the drilling activity, are going to be less active, and they aren't going to be as profitable. What we're seeing now is the layoff of many, many people in the oil and natural gas industry. And coincident with that, we're seeing the coal industry struggling as a result of significant federal regulation has resulted in coal producers and electric power providers having to expend millions and millions of dollars more than they would have had to spend otherwise in order just to comply with federal regulation. That also has resulted in the closing down of 5 of 9 generating units in San Juan County. We have two power plants and three units at Four Corners Power Plant have been shut down, and two of four at San Juan Generating Station have been or will be shut down. Coincident with those shutdowns are the loss of jobs. And at Four Corners Power Plant, we've had probably a loss of 750 to 1,000 jobs. At San Juan Generating Station, we'll have the loss of 500 to 700, even 800 jobs over, over time. So I think we're in a significant, notable depression in the extractive industries in the terms, in the context of job creation at the moment. And it will take a significant uptick in pricing of oil and natural gas for things to come back.
Okay. I had another question. I called my brother earlier today, and he wanted to know why the gas price is so high in Farmington and so low everywhere else.
Well, that is something that is very difficult to explain. Ordinarily, you look to supply and demand to try to figure out why a price of a product or a service is where it is. If you have great demand, a significant demand, and low supply, prices are going to be higher. But there's more working to affect the price of gasoline in our area compared to other areas. It has something to do with transportation. But I can tell you that I can't explain to you without doing quite a bit of research why the comparative prices are different. Historically, that's been the case, though. There have been two or three investigations by the Attorney General of the state of New Mexico to try to determine why pricing of gasoline is higher in northwest New Mexico than in other parts of the state and other parts of the country. It's counterintuitive in a lot of ways, because we know that we have the product that's refined to create gasoline in our area. Those investigations by the Attorney General really didn't result in satisfactory answers either. It's just a very difficult dynamic to put your finger on.
Okay. How do you balance your personal family life with your business jobs?
And so I'm an attorney by profession, and I've practiced about 35 years in Farmington, specializing in oil and gas law. The job of mayor is a part-time job. There are no requirements for the amount of time I spend, but I typically will spend anywhere from 20 to 25 to 30 hours a week when I'm here in town. I will spend that on the job of mayor. Effective January 1st, I essentially retired from my law practice, so I don't have as much of a requirement on my time as I had before that, but still at 25 hours a week serving in capacity of mayor, it does create a demand on my time. Of course, I have a family, and so the challenge is always trying to find the right balance between the things you do for a living and the things you do as a volunteer. Now, I am paid as the mayor of the city of Farmington. I'm paid $15,000 a year, which is not a lot of money. It's not what a lot of people would think, anyway. They would think that the mayor is paid much more. City councilors are paid $10,000 a year. So when you factor in the time I spend with it, I don't make a lot of money on an hourly basis. Mm-hmm. But that's not the reason people get into these positions. They get in for different reasons. Essentially, they're volunteer positions.
So what is your reason that you became mayor?
I was born in Farmington, grown up in Farmington, went to all levels of school in Farmington. Always wanted to come back to Farmington. I've enjoyed Farmington as a place to grow up and a place to raise my own family. And I think when you are involved in a community, when you take from a community, you ought to have the mentality that you're willing to give back to that community. And that's the reason why I decided to become involved in local politics. I ran for the city council in 1998 and served 8 years, and then decided that it would be worthy service to serve as mayor of the community, and so I ran for mayor in 2010.
Okay. So what do you do for fun? I'm going off topic, but...
Well, I am athletically inclined, and I enjoy riding a road bicycle. I've been doing that about 13 years now, and typically will ride a bicycle or pedal a stationary bike anywhere from 2,500 miles to 5,000 miles a year.
Oh, wow.
So I'm an avid bicyclist. I like to play golf. I don't play as much golf as I'd like to, but if I could, I'd probably play 50 rounds of golf a year. Now that I've retired from my law practice, I may find a little bit more time to do those kinds of things that I like to do. I enjoy reading, and I enjoy traveling.
Oh, nice. So where have you traveled late? What's your furthest place?
Oh, probably the last trip that I took was to the Baltic area, Sweden, Finland, Latvia.
Oh, wow.
Germany, France. It was a cruise, but stopped in all of those places and had land excursions. So enjoyed that trip. I enjoy traveling in the United States, though, as well. And about three summers ago, took a driving trip along the Missouri River that tracked the route of the Lewis and Clark expedition. And my wife and I did that, and started in Omaha, Nebraska, and wound up in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. And it was about a 2,200-mile trip that we made in 7 days, and on the back roads close to the Missouri River.
Oh, yeah. Nice.
Yeah.
Well, I think we're done. So.
All right. Well, thanks for having me.
Yep.
Hope that helps you.
Oh, yeah. I hope my teacher likes it, too.
Yeah. All right.
All right. Thank you,
Mary. Good luck to you.
Yep, you too.
And with that interview coming to a close, we find ourselves at the end of this week's episode of Service Learning LRNS Interviews. You're tuned to the Beacon KSJE 90.9 FM, and we will be back next week for one more program featuring many more interviews, all concerning students and the people they find to be successful and what success means to them. Have a lovely evening, and we turn you now over to the Student Activities Radio Hour, followed by Rogue Machinations.